Welcome to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. It is Wednesday, October the 6th, 2021. Before I get started with today's episode, I want to make sure that I thank the patrons of the podcast. So if you're listening out there, give a big shout out to Sylvie and James, John, Brooke, Jason, Colette, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Francisco, Michael, Victoria, Anthony, Jen, and Nate, Christina, Ross, Julie, Brian, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much from the bottom of my heart for continuing to support the podcast. And if you are interested in monetarily supporting the podcast, just head over to patreon.com/ the Mind and Fitness Podcast. And today I've got a returning guest. If you go all the way back to, let me make sure I get the date right, April 10th of 2019, it was episode 65. And I interviewed a gentleman named Andy Bayless, and Andy is back after 130 episodes and 2.5 years. Andy, can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Eddie.
gosh, does it really feel that long? I got to be honest. When I went and looked, I was expecting it to say mid 2020, and I was surprised to see it was the beginning of 2019, actually.
Yeah. Time's going fast for me too. And, Yeah, it's great to be back, Eddie. I really appreciate everything you're doing for folks.
Yeah. So this morning I was out walking the dog and I was listening to just bits and pieces of the interview that we did all the way back then. And so there's some themes or recurring pieces that I want to talk to as it relates to that. But I think in large part, one of the things I really like to do when I have people come back is what sort of realizations or changes or differences or additions in your philosophy on this stuff have evolved over the last 2.5 years. So does that sound like a good path for us to take today?
Sure.
Awesome. Sure. Well, maybe just to get the listeners up to speed that weren't listening back then, which I would encourage you to go and take a listen to that episode again, episode 65 back in April of 2019. Maybe give us an abbreviated version of sort of the kind of pain, because you had a unique pain situation we hadn't actually had on the show prior at that time, and I don't think even since. Maybe an abbreviated version of the sort of pain issues that you felt, and then we'll get into a little bit of some of the realizations that you had. But then the biggest chunk of this I want it to be, what's the case since?
Sure. My left foot began to hurt in the center, and I think that was 2010, and it went to a podiatrist, and I got some treatments, and then I just began this long journey of one treatment after another and ratcheting up the level of interventions and physicians. My foot began to hurt worse and worse, as is often the case with TMS. Then my right foot began to hurt a little bit. So there's another kind of classic example in TMS. I ended up over about 2.5 years, and I started from a very athletic life, skiing, climbing mountains, doing anything I wanted to do. But over that 2.5 years, it just went downhill more and more and more. And the more I attempted to fix it with traditional methods, the worse it got. I did non-traditional methods with acupuncture and Chinese medicine and gua shan, and I just couldn't even tell you the amount of work that I did on my foot. And I began to travel and look for a really good neurosurgeon to do nerve opening surgery. Yep. In the meantime, I'd gotten a blood platelet injection. I flew down to LA for that. By now, I'm like flying around on planes trying to find the best person to operate.
Yeah.
As I'm going along, I had the diagnosis. I think I had 6 surgeons ready to operate with different diagnoses. Some of it was plantar fasciitis. Others said it was an entrapped nerve. And finally, I went to one of the most premier nerve surgeons in the U.S., associated with Johns Hopkins. And he said, it's nerve stuff, and he said you also have neuropathy. So So that's where I was when I began to, when I first picked up John Sarno's book, The Divided Mind, after I had already thrown it across the room a few months before. I changed my insurance. I was scheduled for surgery. You know, before, I'll say one more thing. I went in, it's important, I think. I went in to see another local surgeon, a foot and ankle orthopedic surgeon. And I said to him, what do you think about this tarsal tunnel release thing, this nerve release? And he said, well, you know, I've done a few of those. And he said, the guy it really worked on was a guy who climbed poles for a living.
Yeah.
I said, oh, you mean the spurs? And he said, yeah. And so, and then he said, now you could have plantar fasciitis and we could cut the fascia. We could see if that would work. Or we could do the nerve surgery. And I said, well, which is worse? And he said, well, once we cut the fascia, you're never quite the same. So, so it was so great to finally talk to somebody who said, I said, well, what are the chances of success? He goes, oh, about 50-50, you know, maybe 60%. And it was just such a reinforcement of what I was beginning to read in Dr. Sarno's work, that, you know, placebo is about 50%, mm-hmm. so, or maybe higher. So at any rate, that was my journey. And then I went out to the desert and got, and just went deep into three different retreat times where I just meditated, calm myself, read the book, then begin to do the journaling. And that's when everything changed.
And so a lot of the, one of the themes, and we spent a pretty big chunk of this, and I'm curious for you to give me the definition of kind of how you see it and if this has evolved over time. Cause it's funny. I was thinking about this specific thing yesterday, but a lot of the talk, like I had asked, you know, so what did you do? Did you journal? Did you express somehow? Did you, you know, basically like, how did you get in touch with feelings, and really how do you even feel feelings? What does that even mean? So I'd love to get your take on that and if it's evolved in the last couple of years.
Well, I came into this with a long experience of doing psychological spiritual work after kind of a spiritual psychological opening 25 years ago. So as I came into Dr. Sarno's work, I had a lot of background and skills, so it wasn't foreign to me. So some of the basic techniques and things that I applied at the time and still do with clients and myself is sensing into my body, really being aware of what's going on, and I would say feeling or emotional or affect wise. And that is something that like they say, the body doesn't lie. Yeah. When I sense in, then I know, okay, I'm really angry about this, or I really feel hurt, or I feel overwhelmed right now. And it's a deeper layer than the personality, which is on the level of keeping things going, solving problems, fixing things, kind of keeping all the balls up in the air. And I think another aspect is just sitting and mindfulness and meditation. That in itself, I think, sort of like symptoms are a defense mechanism. We often don't want to sit and not do anything or not have a fuel an active mind because we really don't want to feel the actual texture of what's going on in our body, because we're kind of used to running from it. The anxiety, the emotions which we have deemed not appropriate or too childlike.
And just to be clear before you yeah. keep going on, the texture of what you're feeling in your body, that is a really sore muscle in the back or a sore nerve or, you know, some kind of pain. That's what you mean by texture in the body. Is that right?
No, I mean more like, what does anxiety feel like in my chest?
Okay.
What does sadness feel like? Or is stopping in the moment, just doing a core body scan, like from my head and throat down in the center of my body, mm-hmm. particularly my chest and belly, my groin, just it, right in the center, our torsos is where I think we feel most emotional states. So I'm glad you asked that. That's what I mean in terms of getting in touch with feelings and emotions, that aspect.
Gotcha. No, definitely. And so So one thing that I'm curious of, which by the way, how, if you're comfortable with giving a duration of time, or things like that, once you kind of made this realization and shift, how long before you started seeing a big dent in your symptomatology, if you will?
Oh, it just gradually got better over about 2 or 3 months.
Okay.
So I went kind of crutches and canes and wheelchairs to really skiing again, and put a backpack on. I think that idea of goals is nice sometimes, yeah, if we don't push ourselves. And I dreamed of getting back up to Mount Shasta with a backpack. And so I got back up there probably about 3 or 4 months later. And I lightened my load. I took two loads up for maybe 8 days instead of one load like I used to. So it was about that time frame.
Shasta, I'm sure I would have asked you this. Where in the country are you?
I'm in Ashland, Oregon, which is just north of the California border.
Gotcha. On okay. I-5. So yep. I can't remember if I told this story or not because it was so long ago. But I was born in Chico, and I actually just did a in August, I did a solo motorcycle trip. I went from Seattle. Furthest south I got was Daly City in San Francisco. And but when I crossed from Oregon into California, I did it entirely through a national forest and then popped out in Crescent City. But Ashland, when I was a kid and we moved from California to Washington, our U-Haul truck, the brakes failed and it caught on fire in Ashland, Oregon. That's my best memory of the town was my dad and I pulled over on the side of the freeway and all he had, the fire U-Haul did not have a fire extinguisher present in the truck, which I guess somehow made it through the, the quality control or whatever. So he's using his gloves to try and pat out this fire. Big adventure, but Ashland has a special place in my heart. Is that, do we call it that? Is that what it is? I don't think that's what it is. So the meat and potatoes of this podcast and kind of what I want to get to is if you can, this may be a tough ask, but sort of the evolution or updates in some of your, because I know that a lot of this TMS stuff, though the base of my feelings on it and my thoughts on it and the way to solve it, the foundation's kind of similar and kind of the same. But there are a lot of appetizers that I've developed in the last couple of years since you and I would have talked last. So if you can, just talking about some of the things that you've learned or discovered or maybe thought of in this realm that seem really relevant in the last couple of years.
Sure. I think that I'm focusing with clients and with myself more and more on a sense of reassuring myself. This is just for my own daily life. And with TMS, I think there's something about I've learned this actually from some clients. I remember somebody called it companioning. You know, how can I companion myself? And I think it's a real antidote to the inner critic, the superego, and even on much more subtle levels, just kind of the background way we tend to be in relationship with each other, even just turning away from ourselves and not really occupying our lives as intimately as we can. And so that sense of, and working with pain, symptoms, that sense of helping people with reassuring statements and really formulating those and not denying what's happening in terms of fear or symptoms, but more like might say to myself, but a person might say to themselves, I know you're afraid of taking a walk right now, but I'll be here with you and we're going to do this together. Or I think this is going to be okay. And just really having more and more of a sense, I think there's something about the sense of safety and reassurance that to me is really de-escalates the kind of amped up nervous system that TMSers tend to have, and particularly after a lot of chronic pain and trying to fear of the pain and fighting the pain, trying to fix it, even TMS work, trying to fix it, trying to do it right. Like there's a gentleness that I think is emerging more in my life, and I think applies a lot to this work.
So it almost kind of sounds like, and you know, I didn't know you when all this stuff was going on, but it sounds like that personality, kind of what you're saying, is sort of amped up people by nature or by nurture. You know, they kind of go through this experience of learning about TMS, getting out of pain, if not entirely, at least to a large part. But then there then becomes this process that sounds like it could be lengthy, just in terms of unwinding, reacting differently to certain things, and just kind of having sort of a different presence about yourself. Do you think that's an accurate statement?
I think it is. And I think it's a beautiful process, a part of the process, which is really can be life-changing. It seems like everybody who approaches this work, most people, they come at it about pain, and then it oftentimes really goes much deeper into someone's life about how they're choosing to live, how they're what they want in life, how they've given up what they've wanted in life, and even moment to moment, just more of, I would say, more of an integration, more individuation from our past conditioning, and more really more enjoyment of what's here right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely understand that.
Yeah, I don't know for you, Eddie. I don't know if you found that in your life. You know,
what
ways change you over time?
I definitely have. It's actually something that I've given a lot of thought to recently, like just in the last few weeks. I actually start seeing a therapist on Thursday, as we speak on Thursday, and that's a lot of this. When I had called and I talked to him. First of all, it's impossible to find a therapist right now that is even taking new patients, at least in this area. But one of the things that I had told him that I wanted to address was sort of like a, what's the best way to describe this? Not an assuming the worst with certain situations, but almost like, you know, why do I react certain ways to certain things? Like good example is that my wife and I were in a tiff last week, and she'd sent me a couple of articles about things like ones that I interpreted as highly critical. You're really mad at me. You think I'm terrible, that kind of stuff. Like, what is it about my personality that jumped to that as opposed to, oh, you're trying to inform me about something, or this is the basis of having a conversation, as opposed to attack, attack, attack. So that's like kind of the main thing that I want to unpack and that I'm seeking with a therapist. And I think that that's certainly not something that I would have sought out to get help with, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, certainly. So I know it's a part of this process.
And thanks for sharing that, Eddie, that personal aspect. I think that I guess I want to respond a little bit to say that I think another critical piece when I was out working in the desert on my own work and what I continued to do and what I had come to this work with is work with the inner critic. And when you tell your story, I think of how much we tend to, and it happened to me yesterday with a friend. I took something he said in kindness as an attack on me. And so there's a way that we tend to project our inner critic on the other. Mm-hmm. So that, and working with the inner critic more and more over time, when we can be less identified with it, then we project it less on others, and we're less hooked when they are projecting their inner critic on us. So I guess I just wanted to respond with that to what you said, because I think it's core to kindness to ourselves. When I got done, I was thinking about my friend yesterday, and I was thinking this morning, what is it? I thought, gosh, I wish he was more kind to me. And then I thought, wait a minute, how would I like to be with myself? Is there a nice way? Is it even capable? Am I even capable of being, you know, what kind of attunement would I really like from a friend? And do I have that capacity with myself? And so it was a wonderful contemplation for me just this morning. And so I think that kind of, well, that's another aspect of life changing over time. for me, it's kind of mind blowing that I think the egoic life is so used to putting aside the inner child, putting aside the inner needs. And the more you work on it, the more subtle it becomes. And for some people, when they begin TMS work, as they begin to work with the inner critic, the messages they send themselves, immediately they begin to have more boundaries with others. Like, no, I really think it's time for you to do this work in the house, and I'm not going to do it all for you. Or here's something I've really been wanting to say to you, and I haven't been able to put it to words yet, but it's important to me.
Yeah.
And as that goes on, there's more and more subtle awareness of the inner boundaries with others as well. Inner boundaries with other aspects of ourself as well. So there's a growth with boundaries with others when you do inner critic work, superego work, and then it becomes more and more clear with ourselves, like, so that I don't just boss myself around all day. I mean, you talk about fear and tension with a T, like Dr. Sarno taught. It's, yeah, I've said enough about that, Eddie, but I appreciate you listening.
Yeah. Well, something that was coming to mind when I was actually like going through the process of trying to find a therapist to talk about this thing with. So it's good to know that you're speaking my language, right? You understand what I mean, which tells me it's something that other people give thought to, or at least is a situation that other people experience and go through as well.
Yeah, it's so common. I mean, we really don't become a successful human, mature human being without a well-developed superego inner critic. And so then as we mature and we want to clarify our lives, then by now we're an adult, we know how to be kind, but it isn't just the superego messages. Really down deep, we have a loving nature. That's our most basic state.
Yeah.
And so partly when you work with inner critic, you begin to think, golly, if I'm not hard on myself, will I even do this? Or if I'm not nicey to somebody else, will I be mean? Or, you know, so there's all these fears that come up that without the superego, we might go off the deep end, but it's really not true. And more and more our relations with others becomes actually more genuine and from a place of love rather than meeting a more surface ideal. But these surface ideals are things that we really are identified. We've lived with all our lives.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a nice person. I'm going to do things right. I'm good enough. It's very deep. And I really think that that's one of the things that is core to this work, in at least in my work with people. So,
you have a website. Like, are you working with clients actively right now? Which, by the way, it's tmspainrelief.com. At least that's what the website was back when we did the previous interview, and it looks still active. Are you working with people specifically still?
Yes, I am. Yep, I do phone or video conference more than in person these days. I work with people mostly long distance just because that's where my clients come from.
Yeah. Something I'm curious about, anybody that's in the TMS therapy space or the coaching space, because I've talked to some TMS doctors in the last little while, and it really seems like the way that they're even able to present care has been really upended. A lot of stuff is they're limited to state now, as opposed to being able to help people all over the country, the world, like they were before. A lot of it has to do with new patients and COVID protocols and all that kind of stuff. So how has the pandemic, I guess, maybe changed or adjusted how you work with people? And maybe more specifically, what I'm asking is, are there certain themes or things or anything that you're seeing that jumps out at you that maybe wasn't the case before March 2020?
Yeah, the Zoom is available and gotten better, I think, since the whole thing started. So That's one very minor thing. What I'm noticing with clients is more isolation, more separation from others, more fear, more anxiety. And I feel all those aspects in myself. And then interestingly, I'm beginning to get some clients which possibly their issues around whether they're long haulers or not.
Okay.
And so that I've had some conversations with Howard Schubner and so that's a whole new area that's opening up. How much of long haul COVID is mind body and how much of it is physical? So that's really interesting for me. It's kind of exciting. Of course, there's so many overlaps with that list, those lists of symptoms with what we know of as mind-body treatable kind of TMS equivalent, a chronic fatigue syndrome, pain, et cetera. So that's one area, I guess, that is of particular interest to me.
Gotcha. Has there been, have you arrived at it, which by the way, let me again preface this that Andy nor I are doctors or physicians or anything like that. These are basically educated guesses, but, have you arrived at any sort of a consensus when it comes to that?
Well, you know, I sent, Dr. Schubner some work by, Bruce Patterson, who's doing this deep testing, and he thinks he's found the source of long haul as a remnant of virus in the monocytes. And I've even said too much because I don't know very much about any of that. But brilliantly, Howard wrote back to me and he said, just because he thinks he's found a physical cause does not mean that is the cause of it. Just because he's found this thing, this anomaly that's present, doesn't mean that that's the cause of these symptoms. And that was such a nice response because, I know I think of all the MRIs and the MRI studies and I was thinking, oh yeah, sure. I think so. And we also know that no matter what the cause, if you use a mind-body approach, TMS type approach, symptoms will reduce. And so what I'm doing with clients now is I'm saying, this looks like that, you know, this could be, so here's some actually kind of like medical screening. Here are some avenues that doctors are using for long COVID that I think are really good. I've been deep in the whole COVID treatment thing, early treatment and so on for a long time now. Here's some protocols. Here's these guys that do this deep testing. As we're talking, because that's usually the first chat I have with somebody is let me help you do a self-diagnosis. So let's do what we can to eliminate the physical, an actual physical cause. Mm-hmm. And so from there, folks mostly have decided that they're so done with that, that they're ready for a mind-body approach. So that's just where I am right now. I don't know, but I'm also seeing success with the mind-body approach.
It's interesting. So I don't know if are you familiar with Jim Prusak at all? Have you heard of him or?
The name is familiar, but I don't know his work.
So he's known as the Pain PT. He's been on here a couple of times, but he's a mind-body based physical therapist. That's what he, he's a trained physical therapist, went to school, was doing kind of the physical PT work for a long time. And then now he's doing almost exclusively mind body works. He works with Schubner. I think he's done some work with Schechter and some of the other doctors in the space. But I watched this video that he did recently where he was talking about, and it wasn't talking about COVID or COVID long haul or anything like that, but he was basically saying in all instances really that he's come across, or let's, 99%, let's say just about all, that it doesn't matter the condition or the illness or the injury or whatever the case is. If they can get to a place of relaxation of the nervous system, then like 10 out of 10 times things are getting solved, which I thought, it's such a global thing, right? Whether it is your voice is going out and you're hoarse, or you're feeling the symptoms of a cold, or your foot hurts, or whatever the case is. I mean, I've told a story a couple times on here that it was either very beginning of this year, or maybe it was late last year, where I was like sure that I had COVID and I had all the symptoms of it. And then my wife had kind of pointed out, what if this is just the same as all the other stuff, all the other TMS stuff. And like, lo and behold, the symptoms vanished within a matter of a couple of hours, really. So, and all that, all that was just a realization. And with that, there was nothing really to fear. I knew I didn't have this thing. And so the nervous system settled down, which is just like what Jim talked about in that video.
Isn't that beautiful? I mean, when you're summarizing what he said, I'm thinking, you know, the mechanisms of action in our bodies of this work that was pioneered by Dr. Sarno, we don't know at the level of what at the cellular level of what kind of work it's doing. So I love what you just said, because I'm excited about this mystery of its actual healing effects. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And as you read people's stories, you talk, you know, and working with people and friends, there's so many different ways. I guess it just occurred to me too. There's so many different approaches. I was just thinking of a person I worked with, Angela, and she had digestion issues for so like 20 years, really. And she took everything you can imagine and all the, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. And then her journaling, which really helped her, was gratitude journaling. Like just, and a lot of her issues are about safety.
Yeah.
And how she was treated as a child and not feeling, one, rejecting herself, that she's not safe because she's not good. She's bad. So how does it feel to occupy an existence which is bad? And then it was external messages. So she's not feeling safe around her father as a child. And what she did was just do a deep dive into gratitude. And she's not a person I would even think of as gratitude. Most of the time I'm talking to her, it's about what's wrong and what to fix and how this is not quite working out right. But instead, she just went there. And I think it had to do with a sense of safety and a feeling like the universe, if the universe is giving us things, if we actually, we know it is, right? The air, the sun, my desk here, there's a million gifts that we get in this lifetime. And for her to begin to just contemplate something she was attracted to, oh, wow, I enjoyed that flower today. Oh, I had a good little talk with a friend. And it really, I think it like retuned her nervous system.
Yep.
And I think it has to do with a sense of I belong here and I'm safe. So I don't even know where that conversation started, but I wanted to say that because again, about the miracle of the impacts of this kind of work and all the different ways people can go with it.
It brings up an interesting conversation. So I've done specific episodes around the around positivity, and not to say that I think positivity or anything like that is a bad thing, but I think that it's very social media-esque. In fact, I would always joke like hashtag positive vibes only on Instagram, right? So to me, like there's a really huge problem of people assuming that the only way that, you know, you can get over your issues, whether they be physical or mental or whatever the case is just by thinking happy thoughts. And that's a really good way to get mocked when you're talking about TMS and stuff like that, because that's not the essence of what it's about at all. But you're saying that there was an experience that you've had with a client that that was a big piece for them. Can you just talk a little bit about the difference between experiencing negative emotions, which is Sarno's bread and butter, versus, you know, positivity and gratitude? You know, how do those two things reconcile?
Well, I think that we're deeply made to experience both. We're deeply made. You know, we have such a potential. I was going to say potency. We have this amazing potency. We can feel tremendous joy. And we can feel tremendous sadness. And so part of, I think, the inner work is to learn to become more fluid and more adept at both. And the diving into difficult experiences can be re-traumatizing. I'm not a therapist, but I know that it should be done in a way that feels safe, and it feel when we're journaling. It varies a lot by person, I notice. Some people just feel so good when they get angry.
Yep.
And other people feel really guilty, and that's where we have to work with the inner critic. Or sometimes it brings back traumatic memories, which is really hard. But there, those things, being fluid in feeling what we have been avoiding and what unconsciously drives us much of the time, that those in-depth dives are somehow, I think, calming to our nervous system over time, because we're not repressing. We're repressing less. We also connect it cognitively to the whole theory of TMS work, which I think is very important. So you're feeling a symptom, and then a day later, and you say, oh yeah, I remember how much rage I was in. So, oh, that's what this is now, but I don't feel the rage. I don't necessarily have to in this moment, but this is where it's coming from. It's not those 14 doctors that were going to operate on me, you know, telling me, showing me images. So there's a lot to be said for the more challenging work. On the positivity side, it doesn't take much to notice something beautiful in our environment, or have a beautiful memory, or I'm teaching clients now kind of like what I call a pleasure break, just to take my hands and just put them on my face and feel the cool fingertips on my cheeks. I mean, we are actually like pleasure animals.
Yep.
If we stay in the moment. So I think the way I like to approach positivity is in a very kind of direct, real way, with not trying to do a spiritual bypass and tell myself I'm happy, happy, happy when I'm not, but recognize that in this moment, there are techniques I can do to bring me into a more positive state. And in pain and with TMS and just a TMS personality, the more time I spend, I think Dr. Sarno talked about like the scale of tension versus whatever he said, non-tension or ease. The more waking hours we spend or moments where we're not amped up, and in fact, we're even trusting that goodness and pleasure can be here, that's a very deep practice that's life-changing too, I think.
Yeah. So Sarno, I think what you're looking for is the soothe to rage ratio.
Soothe to rage. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Soothe to rage. And I think of it as on one side, a lot more inner tension, and on the other side, a lot less tension. You know, how much time are we spending in these realms? So
when I interviewed Dr. Margaret Chan, who appeared really briefly in the All the Rage film about Sarno's life. She's a TMS psychologist, and she had said that the soothe the rage ratio to her is actually the biggest part of the entire equation. One thing that I, as you were talking about the, you know, we're pleasure animals, basically, I noticed that I can go to anger. I can experience, feelings in the body. I can do all that kind of stuff. First of all, the only thing that I feel immediately after that is just exhaustion, very tired. Like I went to war is kind of how I feel. But, shortly then after, maybe it's an hour, a couple of hours, or even the next morning or whatever the case is, this happens all the time. When I'm out on a walk or, you know, really doing anything, these positive thoughts do start to flood me, whether it's about, here's the great experience I had, or man, I'm so great at my day job, or hey, like we had an awesome soccer practice not too long ago, or, you know, I'm great at motorcycling, like all these things that just come in, things that I absolutely could not have seen if you would have asked me 1 minute before sort of going to war with basically like an inner demon almost. So I find those things hand in hand, and it happens 100% of the time.
Wow. That's such a great report, that it kind of opens up for the next few hours, their sense of positivity.
Yeah.
After it.
Yep. Yeah. And that's something that I notice all the time as I do it. And again, like this happened last week where, you know, my head just literally felt full. It just, everything felt heavy. The world felt heavy. And I went through and I did my thing, and it was like a, you know, 500 pounds had been taken off of my shoulders. And then suddenly, gosh, the world looks like a really great place. And I'm just so happy about this, this, and that. But I could not have gotten there if it wasn't for going through this, you know, way. I say to people a lot that, like, the only way really to get beyond the wave is to go through the wave. And I, visually, I'm always thinking about surfing when I say things like that. But it, you know, it's the same. Like I told you, I went on that motorcycle trip, and when I was going through the forest and I'm riding through dirt and terrain and stuff like that, and I'm solo and I have no cell service, and I would see areas that, you know, the terrain is really, really tricky and something could happen. The only time that things happen and don't work out in my way, in my favor, is when I try and avoid them in some way. Whereas if I just go, like my buddy, one of my best friends, Josh, and another friend of mine, Matt, we were riding up this mountain last summer, this was last summer, 2020. And you know, we're deep in the woods. There's no cell service, and it's a one lane dirt road, but it's like it had just poured a couple days earlier, and so it was very muddy. But I always say, like, stay on your terrain and go through, you know, you have to pick your lane and just stay there regardless of how tough the terrain gets, because when you try and cross terrain to avoid it is when there's a problem. And that's what he did, and I watched him wipe out and wreck right in front of me, and his clutch cover came off, and we had to go, God, it was 2.5 hours to ride back home with his bike still there, so we could get a vehicle and a trailer to drive back up to the top of the mountain, tow the bike back down. You know, it was like a 10-hour ordeal, the whole thing. And I was just thinking on the way back, I was like, if you'd have just went through the trouble as opposed to around the trouble, that would have never happened. So it's come up. It's a theme. I see it. I think it's a thing.
Yeah, I want to respond a little bit to that and the whole idea of anger work. When, you know, the sense of well-being that you talk about and the positivity and the sense of going through it, I think it takes, for all of us, I've been doing this for 25 years, it takes a courage. It takes a certain courage to enter that realm for me. And it also is something which builds courage. You know, like when you talk about going through that difficult place, it's like a pathway that we develop confidence with slowly, but it's still a doorway that I have to go through every time. And so it takes courage. The other thing I want to say about the positivity is, and it's related to inner critic work too, the way and your skill of working with anger. Typically, when somebody does some anger work, either with journaling or with a wiffle bat or yelling into a pillow, going out to their car and just yelling at their wife where it's safe and nobody can hear them at the top of their lungs and calling them every, you know, when you do this, most of the time with clients, what opens up is what is a very deep core essential experience, which has certain qualities, and the qualities are aliveness, fullness in the body, a sense of blood flow and strength, a sense of efficacy, a sense of like I can do, and a sense of being able to meet obstacles and barriers. And so this, and then that becomes really potent to work with the inner critic and also other issues in our life. But I never heard anybody describe, you know, I've worked so many times with clients too. They go through some anger and then I say, how do you feel? They're like, well, I feel solid on the ground right now. I feel like I feel all this wonderful warmth coming up through my chest. I feel like that problem I had with my sister doesn't really matter anymore.
Yep.
But I never heard anyone talk about it quite the way you did, Eddie. So thanks for that.
Yeah. You said something a couple of minutes ago about, you know, having like the courage to go through and do those things or go there. I find that actually very much in like a physical sense. If I think about Eddie pre TMS acknowledgement and that, like, I was in so much pain. I've had this person emailing me pretty recently. I've actually had quite a few people emailing me recently about, you know, certain issues that they're having. One person, I'm assuming they're an athlete, thoracic outlet syndrome, which is a death sentence for a lot of athletes. And that was like kind of the biggest thing that I was diagnosed with, and they want some help with this and that kind of stuff. Before all of this, it's not that I was like scared to get hurt, but I very much I would have like a lot of timidness when it came to the way that I trained, the hobbies that I engaged in, the things that I did, the way that I rode a motorcycle, like kind of, you know, all these things. And I really don't have any of that anymore. And some of it might seem like a little reckless in a way, I guess. But I think that from a physicality standpoint, the thing that TMS is really, and this whole process has really taught me, is just how incredibly strong that the body and the tissues of the body are. Because I've taken some pretty nasty falls, whether it be on my skateboard or my electric skateboard or my motorcycle or my bicycle or a lot of these things that, like, you know, 5-6 years ago, even though I was a quote tough guy with tattoos, and I still, you know, I lifted weights back then too, and all that kind of stuff. But, I just always kind of had a governor on me in a way, because I felt like there are a lot more limits versus, and I've never seen the Bradley Cooper movie, but and I don't think it's even about this, but I have felt pretty limitless since all of that stuff happened, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, learning more about Sarno and all that kind of work and just how incredibly capable it is. But at the same time, also, when I just go there and experience the anger side of it, I really do feel like there's not a lot of limits to the things that I could take or handle in my emotional life. Does that make sense?
Yes, it opens up a sense of efficacy and strength and can do, and also a sense of freedom. Well, you said, I think you said limitless. There's a sense of expansion. You talked about that earlier.
Yep.
And I love how you're talking about how the whole thing has changed your life in relationship to injuries. I just put up an article on my website last night called Ease, Trust, Success, and Positive Loops. And it's kind of looking back at the process. And a little bit I write about that. Like, I used to be so afraid of getting hurt.
Yep.
You know, because you hear all, I had a whiplash like back at 50, almost 20 years ago. And it was a disabling experience before my foot problems. And then, so then I got, you know, then I'm realizing, oh, if I fall off my bike or I get in a car wreck, I'm going to be fine. So there's, it's wonderful you're talking about this, because there's kind of a potency or an assuredness that is connected to, what is it? It's connected to being maybe our completely true, almost animal self when we allow anger, like all the bindings are cast off for a little bit.
Yep.
And so we re-tap into something which is, it's like vitality. So I appreciate this conversation a lot. Eddie, you always add something to my understanding. I mean, you've added many things today, so thank you.
I'm sort of like an audio fortune cookie. Well, we're a few minutes past kind of what I planned on, but, you know, like I said, so you've got a website, tmspainrelief.com. You know, the purpose of the website? Is it mostly for blogging? Is it, hey, people like what you're about and like the two episodes that we've done and they're interested in learning more about you? What's the idea behind the site?
I think I have pretty good content for just education. I have a lot of links to the TMS Wiki outfit and to other practitioners. And so I really, I want it to be a resource site. And then it's also Meet Andy. I have a little video on there for 10 minutes mentioning my process and how to get in touch with me. If you also the articles, I always encourage folks to read. I don't put that much new content up, but I think my four little articles are pretty nice about summarizing personal examples of how to work the you know, a form of this process. So and then it's just a way to contact me if folks want to work with me.
Awesome. Andy, thanks for coming back. Let's not make it 2.5 years till the next one. But hey, thanks for coming back and joining us.
You're welcome, Eddie. And I really appreciate the breadth of your understanding and just the way you bring your life into it. It's you are a beautiful story. Thank you.